This is a rather rare occasion in many ways to have Professor Moody, Moody as I think you really pronounce it in Dutch, to have him with us. Because when we think of Holland, we usually think of a Reformed country, a Calvinistic country, which it is. It's also very Roman Catholic, and we have only 100,000 Lutherans there. So happens, however, that Professor Mitter is a Lutheran and is organist of our church in Utrecht. Has served in that capacity also in Amsterdam. He is the son, incidentally, I think this will interest you. He is the father of a son who is a student of theology, preparing for the Lutheran ministry, who's out in what we would call his vicarage this year. He has a daughter who's studying to become a physician, and his wife is in the city, but we're showing her the city since she does not understand English too well, and my wife is showing her around a bit, so she's not with us, but she's in St. Louis at the same time. I've known Professor Mitter for some years, and I would like to read some of the material that was assembled here so that you might know him a little better. Professor Mitter was born on October 25th, 1909, in Amsterdam. We usually say Amsterdam. They always put the accent on the last syllable, and it's Amsterdam. Amsterdam. He studied church music in Amsterdam and later in Berlin at the Hochschule für Kirchenmusik under Professor Söngen, and I might say that originally Professor Söngen was supposed to be here, and Professor Mitter is taking his place. Professor Mitter could not come to America because illness suddenly set in and changes had to be made. He studied also with Fritz Heitmann, an excellent organist of years ago, he's not living anymore, who played here in St. Louis too on one occasion, Wolfgang Reimann, and Gottfried Grote. I do not know Mr. Reimann, but I know Mr. Grote. He's one of the finest conductors they have, choral conductors they have in Germany. I don't know whether he's still in Berlin or not. Professor Mitter is organist and director of church music in Amsterdam and Utrecht. After the Second World War, he concentrated his efforts towards building a church music program for the Lutheran Church in Holland. In 1946, he organized the Lutheran Work Group for Church Music and has maintained its leadership to this day. He founded the Journal for Church Music, Musica Sacra, to which he has contributed many articles pertaining to liturgy, hymnology, and church music in general. As editor of this publication, he has maintained a lively interest in contemporary church music and has given that a little publicity to the American scene, particularly to the work being done at the church music seminars at Valparaiso University. I might add here that Professor Mitter is teaching at Valparaiso this school year. This is the second time they've had him at Valparaiso. For the liturgical practice of the church choirs, he published a choir book of graduals in 8 parts, which book contains many of his own compositions. He founded the Utrecht Motet Society for the purpose of propagating new church music. This society is heard regularly on the Holland radio, and it has traveled extensively, concertizing in Germany, France, and the Scandinavian countries. The group has been recorded by the Cantata Records. Some of you know those. As organist, Professor Mitter is heard regularly on the Holland radio and has concertized in European cities. He has published compositions for organ, choral works, and so forth, including our Concordia Publishing House. And he's preparing a new collection of music for Concordia Publishing House at the present time. In 1955, he organized the Evangelical Lutheran World Conference for Church Music, which held its first congress in Amsterdam. In 1957, he was invited to lecture at the church music sessions of the Lutheran World Federation in Minneapolis. Following this conference, Professor Mitter came to the Valparaiso University campus as guest professor. He worked on this campus with great success and was an excellent teacher and choral leader. highly respected and greatly appreciated by the students. At present, Kantor Mitte is on the faculty of the Utrecht Conservatory of Music, the Department of Church Music, where he teaches organ, history of church music, and liturgy. Last November, he was invited to lecture on contemporary church music in Europe at the Music Seminar in Minneapolis, and during his short visit in America, he also lectured at Ralph Frazer University and a number of other Lutheran colleges and universities. He has been an earnest worker for a closer cooperation between musicians of the Lutheran Church in America and in Europe. He was a visiting delegate at the first meeting of the Society for Worship, Music, and the Arts. So I think that will suffice, and I take pleasure now in presenting to you Dr. Noel Mitte of Utrecht.
Thank you very much, dear Christian Prince. At the beginning, I have to say something. At first, I like to express my thanks to Dr. Boussin for his introduction, and I might add that I'm very happy in being here. I know him for several years, and I'm very happy to know him because we had a very nice cooperation in the field I'm doing the last 10 years, of the international cooperation of church music. Well, I'm so very happy to be here. I'm staying at the home of Dr. Boussin, and I know many things about his work here, so I think it is a big honor to be here and to speak to you, to theological students who have been so very good instructed in the field of church music as you are by Dr. Boussin. Secondly, I have to excuse myself, is that right, for my poor English. Well, I will tell you, I was invited last week to a faculty women's club in Valparaiso and to talk about Holland, I think. Well, I did not have time to prepare anything, so I said to this woman who invited me, well, that may be funny when I try to do it by improvising in English. Then she said to me, well, we just enjoy your accent. Then I said to her by phone, well, you don't know that, but I learned British English at school in Holland, and you don't know how I am enjoying your American accent. So, maybe it is a little fun to you, but I have to say that what I'm going to present to you is not funny, that is really seriously, and I think I have to do that. This, and what I am going to present, I could really dedicate to Dr. Boussin, because I think that it's special, the field he worked on here, and he may say at the end whether he decrees or not. Well, the title of this paper is The Church Hymn and Its Way into Music. And I think it's a good idea to do this for you students in theology of a Lutheran seminary. At the time when the Reformation appeared on the dark heaven of the life of the church, it looked as though it would destroy the harvest of European music like a thunderstorm. With its protest against the Mass as an opus operatum, as a material interpretation of worship, the Reformation also opposed the artificial music that accompanied the Mass, and that, as it was formulated in the motu proprio of Pius X, shrouded the Mass in beautiful garments of holiness, of beauty, and Catholic universality. And what did the Reformation put in its place or substitute? Surely not something that one could actually call art, but the sacred folk song, tolerated only as an evil in the Catholic Church, something that had only a very simple musical form and that could be sung by anyone. Nevertheless, there was an entirely different reason that at the time of the Contra-Reformation, the Jesuits burned more evangelical hymn books than Bibles, even though they possessed little of artistic value, at least in their elementary form. The song which accompanies the Reformation to its victory showed many other qualities. Wherever it was heard, it drew with magnetism the hearts of men, and it strengthened the confessional courage of the Reformation-minded people. It created a breach in the once-so-strong bulwark of the Church. It overpowered dynasties and changed the faith of entire cities. The story of what took place in 1529 in the city of Lübeck in Germany is well known. On the first Sunday of Advent, a poor blind man was singing in front of the church entrance the hymn, "O Lord, look down from heaven." And for this, he was forced by the papal-minded authorities to leave the city. 1 week later, a few boys took over the singing of this hymn in the Jacobi Church. The entire congregation joined in and sang the song to its conclusion, as though it had learned it in church, and they brought the officiating pastor into silence. And if, at a later time, another pastor said anything from the pulpit which the evangelical-minded people did not like, the same hymn, "O Lord, look down from heaven," was always sung, until both the church and the city acquired a Protestant government. Koch, author of the great history of the church hymn and hymn singing, says, "It thus happened that this one simple song affected more than human power and sense could have done." Martin Luther made the beginning. The song with which the city of Lübeck was won was written by him. It was his adaptation of Psalm 12. He really did not write it to create a revolution, but as he wrote in a letter to Spalatinus, following the example of the prophets and church fathers in order to create psalms and hymns in the mother tongue, and so that through song the word of God would always remain with the people. He did not consider himself a poet and was therefore in search of poets, who he encouraged to write songs from a psalm. Probably he sent his own adaptation of Psalm 130, "Out of the depths I cry to thee," to Spalatinus as a sample of his own work. And in all likelihood, Luther, like Calvin you may say, above all like to have at his disposal psalms, hymns for his service, a worship service, even though he was not satisfied to bring the psalms into simple verses. At first, the poets did not react quickly, so that Luther had to work alone from the beginning. In the meantime, he also wrote catechismal songs, adaptations of old hymns, etc. But as one sheep follows the other, Paul Spiratus, Elisabeth Kreuziger, and Justus Jonas were his first helpers. The Achtliederbuch, the Eighth Songbook, and the Enchiridion of Erfurt were able to appear with the first 25 evangelical congregational hymns. In 1524, it was even possible to print the first official hymn book with 32 hymns for the use of the schools and their choirs. And since then, the stream has swollen mightily. In Germany, under the influence of men like Decius, Nikolaus Hermann, later of Philipp Nicolai, Ringwald, Hermann, and to make mention of other famous names, Paul Gerhardt, Johann Riest, Joachim Meander, and Graf von Zinzendorf. In Bohemia, where Michael Weise wrote his first hymns, Herbert and Vaterfold, his example. The first Swiss hymn book appeared in 1536 and was compiled by Johannes Zwick and Six Dietrich. In France, where Calvin reformed the church, Marot began the work on a complete psalter, which was later finished by Bessard. It also contained some hymns and the Creed. And in Holland, Willem van Zuylenveld wrote his own psalter on popular melodies of Maardix van Sint-Aldegonde, and Jacob Rivius composed their psalms, and Athen translated the French psalter for use in Holland. The pens of the poets and composers were busy. Printing presses came into action, and the churches were filled with songs, with massive congregation of singing. And after many centuries, the same hymns created by the Reformation are still sounding in churches and homes, in schools and on the radios, and they are still being sung as a confession of faith and as the loud prayer of the congregation. We hardly know what is more important after the Bible, the Catechism or the hymn book, of which Nebuchadnezzar said that the communio fidelium is expressed in it. The common faith from the New Testament to Bernard von Clairvaux, from Luther to our time. A theologian of the last century testified that if one would want to know what faith is, one would have to take the catechism in hand. But if we want to know what is still alive of its contents, we have to consult the hymn book. It is really difficult to grasp how deeply the church hymn reaches into the life of the Christian. We often do not realize it, but is it not so that more Christians die with a hymn verse on their lips than with a scriptural word? But now, what about the relationship between these hymns and the art of music? Did the Reformation, with its hymns and other songs, estrange the art of music from itself? I would now be tempted to investigate the differences between Luther, Zwingli, and Calvin in their standpoint over against the art and against the use of music in liturgy. However, in this connection, we have to decline. Let me only say that these differences do not rest on personal opinions or talents. Matters are not as simple as that. They spring from deeper sources. They refer back to their different theological convictions on the essence of the worship service and of the phenomenon of music. All three of the reformators were true friends of music. It even has to be said that Zwingli probably was the most talented one musically, and the one who put his musical knowledge into practice, even though he closed his church hermetically to all music, even to the congregational singing. The art of music, since we are speaking of it, also took other paths than those of the church. At the time, the Reformation closed its church doors to her, as it
as in Reformed Protestantism, it was free to separate itself from the heritage of the church, or it could choose to identify itself with Rome, which, under the influence of the Reformation, also was at odds with music. Naturally, the art of music cannot make a decision. She cannot consider anything. Also, she is not a matter for consideration, as many people now think. But through this, she does not commit herself. In this respect, the modern music philosophers are right in saying that the art of music has its own inborn rules and basically throws itself to adventure, that to say, outside of its own atmosphere. It all depends whether music, with its expression, can make us what is taking place in its environment, or what she should meet in her path, what would be inspiring to her, and whether she could translate it into her own language. Again, it should be stated differently, for it is the individual, the free artist, who deals with the music, even though it is and remains a gift of God. Therefore, it depends on whether the individual is impressed with other than musical appearances, or if he wishes to draw into his musical work religious and sacred values and truths which he tries to express. By the way, in our time, this possibility of musical expression has indeed been denied, for instance, by Stravinsky. But we know it can express many things, as even was stated by the pupil of Schoenberg, Theodor Adorno. The Reformation was above all a tremendous spiritual event that touched the individual deeply, offering him freedom and at the same time giving him new responsibilities. And in the second place, the sacred folk song that had produced was truly a simple, but therefore not a non-musical phenomenon. So there were many chances that after the thunderstorm of the Reformation, a new growth would prosper in the field of the art of music. Also in this connection, the statements by Emil Frommel could be used that wonders create songs and songs create wonders. For what a wealth of polyphonic music, of artistic polyphony, of great and small forms of music did arise on the basis of the Protestant chorale. Basically, it was the nature of the church hymn of the Reformation that it would attract the art of music more than the Gregorian chant could. This Gregorian chant has been called the expression of the medieval musica ecclesiastica attitude, an existential creation, an almost world-form appearance that shared association with other parts, even though these would only want to harmonize, because with it, it would only lose its character. In contrast, we could call the church hymn of the Reformation the musical expression of the musica vulgaris, because it sprouted in the souls of the people. In its greater subjectivity, it struck a more personal chord, and because it played a part in the family life, it desired to be in contact with other parts, even if they played the part of counterpoint. Through this, it would become enriched with splendor and power of expression. When we now take a look how the connection developed between the Lutheran chorale and the art of music, we discover that the church hymn took its first step in the field of house and school music. It is the so-called kirchliche Gebrauchsmusik, music for church use, which developed when composers like Walter, Stalter, Licinarius, and Erlans, having a new professional ethic, started to put the songs of the Reformation in the form of chorale arrangements and motets. To these can be added the polyphonic psalm settings made by Bourgeois and Coudimel on the Geneva Psalter. These arrangements really did not have any liturgical purpose, but they testified in the same splendid way of the power and inspiration of the hymn of the Reformation, as also did the psalm motets of Claudel, Paschal de l'Estocar, and so as not to forget the later and great psalm compositions, vocal and instrumental, instrumental of the Dutch composer Jan Pieterszoon Swelinck. But the song of the Reformation penetrated more deeply into the art of music because it won greater forms for itself. I'm thinking of Praetorius Musae Sionis, of the few but impressive cantus firmus composition of Schütz, of the art of organ chorales of Samuel Schacht and Parkelbel. I am thinking of Dietrich Buxtehude, and last but not least, of Johann Sebastian Bach, who St. Matthew's Passion never would have become the main passion music if it did not consist of 1.5 dozen choral stanzas. And if the impressive first chorus were not laced on the cold wire of the chorale Lamb of God Most Holy, and if the touching, plaintive song completing the first part of the Passion did not re-echo against the wall of the beautiful melody of the chorale of Matthias Kreiter, O Mensch, Beweint Dein Sündenkreuz. The Lutheran hymn finally penetrated so prominently, extensively, deeply, and so decisively in the art of music that we even can overcome the hesitation to speak of Lutheran church music. Surely, there are many complaints against it. We do realize that it was always the great strength of the music of the Lutheran Church that it did not isolate itself from its surroundings as the music of the Catholic Church did. On the contrary, we know that it was a part of its being to assimilate itself with all musical developments of its time and surroundings. But because the polyphonic music of the Lutheran Church received a special character by the use of the Lutheran chorale, we could in this case speak of her third dimension, and so of a special phenomenon. Truly, it is not a work of magnitude in itself, as the Catholic Church is and wants to be. She is not musica sacra either, but even though we can not isolate it from all other music, we can classify it as a special type of music because of the fact that it has its roots in the hymn of the church from which it originated and to which it will return. By the way, if one would ponder on this, one could even go so far as Johannes Mail, who stated that even the angels of Loop 2 sang in a Lutheran way. But we are not yet finished. The hymn of the Reformation that seemed to be so poor penetrated even deeper into the art of music. It penetrated beyond the boundaries of this type of church music. It can be found there where one would not look for it. So the hymn of Luther, O Lord, look down from heaven that once reformed the city of Lübeck, appeared in the opera of Mozart, the magic flute. And this at the moment of its appearances at the as a sign on the wall. The chorale of Philip Nicolai, How Bright Appears the Morning Star, sounds as a musical background in the piano accompaniment of the Christmas hymn, Three Kings of Peter Cornelius. The melody of A Mighty Fortress is Our God is used by Max Reger in his 100th Psalm as crowning counterpoint played by brass players in the double fugue of the final part. And to mention just one modern example in this field, the chorale, Es ist genug Herr, wenn es dir gefällt, used by Bach in the final chorus of his cantate, O Ewigkeit, O Donnerwort, was chosen by Alban Berg as a theme in the last movement of his violin concerto. This work can really not be added to the musical repertoire of church music. I think that these examples are sufficient. It now will be clear, and it is also well known, that the church hymn of the Reformation had an inspiring influence on the art of music. Actually, this influence was so great and so decisive that Bachmann dared to say that finally, the entire culture of music since the Reformation breathed the spirit of the Reformation. Have we now brought out everything that should have been said? It's the conclusion that the hymn of the Reformation won for itself the art of music, and that it often even became the spine, that is the support of the art of music, the end of this survey and of our consideration. So are we now finished? The musician dealing only with music probably will answer this question with only one restriction. He may only have one more as observation to make, even though a very important one. We will listen to him. The church musician, who has as much love for the church as for the church music, and who is a church musician in heart and soul, and thus uses looking through the window of the church into the world, will want to make a further remark. It is a remark burning in his heart, and which is hardly a closing remark, but moreover the beginning of a song of praise. This special song of praise on the song of praise to God. Because he is also a musician, and since he knows the history of music too, he does not have any objection to the statement of his only aesthetically thinking colleague. If this statement emphasizes that not all church songs inspired the art of music. On the contrary, he wants his pastors and congregations to know that he agrees that only a small group of church hymns had the power to impress great composers. A small group with special musical substance was selected by the art of music because of its striking melodic architecture. And the secret of this fact is that the power of these hymns is not their obvious beauty, but their concealed musical structure. From the composer's handling of these elite melodies, we know that they used the technique of analysis, the daily work, and that they thus arrived to the hymn's deepest significance, to their power of germination from which have sprung their musical masterpiece. If we study the works of Walter to Praetorius, from Bach to Reger, and of our present-day outstanding composers, we see that they were not always by the congregation the most beloved, but actually the musical best constructed hymns that were used by the master composers. For instance, the old hymn, Nun kommt der Heiden Heiland, Savior of the Nations Come, in all its simplicity, consists of a remarkable musical construction. The first and last phrases are completely equal, and the second and third are exact melodical reflections. Such great musical discoveries can be made too by analyzing melodies like Aus tiefer Not schrei ich zu dir, Out of the Depth I Cry to Thee, Allein Gott in der Höhe sei er, or Glory be to God on high, also from later periods like Jesu meine Freude, Jesus Christ's Treasure. And if one analyzes the two well-known hymns of Philipp Nicolai, one understands why Wachet auf für unsere Stille, Wake, Awake, for Night is Flying, and Wie schön leuchtet der Morgenstern, How lovely shines the morning star, are called the King and Queen of the Church hymns, and were so often chosen in the greatest work of the greatest composers. They are hymns of real majestic musical beauty and with surprising musical architecture. And so it may be repeated once more that it is true that just church hymns with special substance possess the potency to inspire the great composers, and that they therefore were able to do the gradus apanasum, that means the big step up to the top of the mountain of the art of music. But the church musician is going to interrupt in order to finish this reasoning. He is still agreeing, but remembering and reminding that in the best hymns of the church is found the congregational proclaiming of the creed and of the word of God. He is making haste to now add that in this way, something more is happening, because together with the great and famous melodies, the church and its message is then lifted up to the panacea. Two, from where both can be and will be heard by people who have turned their back to the church because they think that they do not need the church anymore. The final observation the church musician wants to make is that we Lutheran Christians, who are supposed to support the singing church, after some centuries of this rich heritage, now are so poor that we hardly realize what great missionary resources are available in our church hymns, particularly in the select group of the Reformation period. Already in the last century, Max Reger, himself a Catholic, proclaimed that you Protestants do not know what you possess in your chorale. Now, in our time, we could heave the sigh that we do not remember what it means that our church hymns were adapted so triumphantly by the art of music. For instance, who thinks of it that nowadays, in Moscow, godless educated people nevertheless still come in contact with the happy message of the church through Bach's St. Matthew's Passion and its many chorales, and that everywhere in the world where people substitute religion through their worship of the arts, they are nevertheless still found by the church through the art of music, in which the song of the church lives on and continues its work. Truly, the church musician who combines church and music in his heart and soul could sing a song of praise of the union of select church hymns and select church music, because through the result of this union, he sees many not yet used possibilities to serve the church with his music. A song of praise modulates to a song of lamentation when he sees how little the church itself is thinking of making use of this means, since it is only thinking of the aesthetic substance of the music. But it is especially the rediscovery of our time of this post-modern and post-Christian era in which the spoken word has devaluated so strongly that the song of the church, together with all its other good qualities, also has a missionary power. He who deals with the church hymn and knows of its radiating power in and through the art of music knows that it can today fulfill a special church function. As a witness of the church, it can fulfill a mission to the outpost of the church, and through the art of music, which the hymn won for itself, it is already standing as a servant of the church in the midst of the world. Paul Gabriel, a fine hymnologist, gave much recognition to the church hymn when he said that many melodies water the words, so that the word of God looks refreshed and is prevented from wilting, and can grow and bring fruit in man's heart. But Gabriel did hit the nail on the head when he mentioned that the church hymn is a lengthening arm of the Bible, an arm that reaches so far that one cannot hide from it, because it is always there where one least expects it, and where one's supposed to have no need for it, just as a mother who is always providing for the needs of his child. And with this we can come to a close, because the only thing the church musician still has to say before he can begin the work he would like to do for the church at this time is that the church should listen to him, and also should realize that the church hymn, with its musical power, has at the same time religious power. When we sing and listen to it, if we fathom it and use it with all its artistic possibilities, we will discover that the select hymn of the church has a special radius. Then we will see that it can bring the message of the church there where it would not otherwise be brought, that it seeks the lost sons and helps hibernate the faith, that it preaches and encourages, and that it does nothing else and nothing less than what its duty is, namely, that it ministers to the world. And if it does it artistically, it does it thoroughly, even if we would not believe it. Thank you.
And we appreciate very much, Dr. I can call him Dr.